Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science news and music from Austin, Texas. I'm Michael Brennan. This week, the upcoming meteor showers, lunar halos, and tunes from The Boxing Lesson and Elwood and the Spice Boys. Here's your scientist soundbite.
The moon will be waning around the 9th, 10th, 11th when the North Torrids will be going on, and it'll be a really thin waxing crescent moon in the west after sunset that'll set really soon after the sun during the nights of the Leonid meteor shower. So the moon is in a great place.
That's sky watcher Deborah Bird. We'll talk with her about lunar halos and meteor showers in a few minutes. But first, Emily Howard and I will run through science news of the week. Welcome, Emily.
Thanks, Mike. Superstorm Sandy struck the U.S. mainland on October 29th and began moving slowly inland. In the meantime, millions in the U.S. East awoke Tuesday without power. Transportation came to a halt. New York City was among the hardest hit, with subways and tunnels flooding. At least 16 deaths in 7 states have been reported so far. The storm made landfall in New Jersey on Monday evening, October 29th. At landfall, winds were 80 miles per hour. Our thoughts are with all those affected by the storm.
The night before Hurricane Sandy made landfall, many on the U.S. East Coast saw a lunar halo, a ring around the moon. The night of the landfall itself, as clouds from Sandy covered the U.S. East Coast, many in the U.S. Midwest and West saw a halo as well. Solar and lunar halos are pretty common, but they're so mysterious looking that people often express amazement upon seeing them. Halos around the moon or sun are the result of thin cirrus clouds drifting above our heads, and they're a sign of nearby storms. We'll talk more about that connection with Deborah Bird later in the program.
A new study used computer modeling to shed light on the origin of sight in animals, including humans. Opsins, the light-sensitive proteins key to vision, may have evolved earlier and undergone fewer genetic changes than previously believed. That's according to a new study from the National University of Ireland Maynooth and the University of Bristol, published this week in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. The researchers developed a timeline with an opsin ancestor common to all groups appearing some 700 million years ago. This opsin was considered blind, yet underwent key genetic changes over the span of 11 million years that conveyed the ability to detect light.
On October 23rd, researchers at the National Marine Mammal Foundation published their acoustic analysis of the voice of a beluga whale named Nock, who can apparently imitate the voices of humans. The researchers thought they were hearing two people talking, just out of the range of their understanding, when they first noticed Nock's voice coming from a whale and dolphin enclosure. Here's Nock's voice. These researchers say the whale had to modify its vocal mechanics in order to make the speech-like sounds, and such obvious efforts suggest motivation for contact. The researchers reported their findings in the October 23rd issue of the journal Current Biology. That's Science News of the Week. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard. This week's Song of the Week is Better Days by The Boxing Lesson. They've released a fun new video for this song just this week, and you can check it out at earthsky.org.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to Earth Sky 22. You can find us as Earth Sky on Facebook, Earth Sky Science on Twitter, and at earthsky.org. Earth Sky's Deborah Bird is here to talk about lunar halos, the upcoming meteor showers, and the night sky. Welcome, Deborah.
Thank you, Mike. Well, this was, of course, a very strange week meteorologically, and also in the sky. And of course, the two are, you know, related. So when Hurricane Sandy hit the U.S. mainland on October 29th, the night before that on our Facebook page, in fact, the whole weekend before that, we had a lot of people on the U.S. East Coast talking about seeing lunar halos. And you've probably seen one yourself, Mike. A lunar halo is a big ring around the moon. You can also sometimes see one around the sun. Mm-hmm. And so in the nights before Sandy hit the U.S., people were talking about these lunar halos, and they were seen all up and down the eastern seaboard. And then the night after Sandy hit, or the night that Sandy was hitting on the East Coast, and the East Coast was clouded out, then suddenly lunar halos began to be seen in the U.S. Midwest and western part of the, I mean, as far west as, you know, Washington State and Los Angeles, people were taking pictures of lunar halos. So it was a very strange phenomenon that I don't think I've ever seen that happen before.
Yeah, we saw some amazing pictures on our website of people just sending in pictures of these halos all around the world.
Right. And I mean, it's not, so we're not here saying that Hurricane Sandy caused this rash of lunar halos, although, boy, it sure looked to me as if it did.
Right. Is there a relation there?
Well, there is, because lunar halos are caused by high, thin cirrus clouds, and they're very high up, like at about, say, 20,000 feet, somewhere like that. And those kinds of clouds often do come before storms. So, you know, we in science, we hate to say that one thing causes another if we don't have proof for that. So I'm not saying that, Sandy caused these lunar halos, but certainly there is a very interesting correlation between, you know, Hurricane Sandy striking the U.S. and this huge rash of lunar halos.
Right, and it was a full moon. It was the Hunter's Moon.
That's right. It was the full Hunter's Moon. In weather lore, there's this saying, "Ring around the moon means rain soon." So it's interesting that, you know, people who used to observe the sky before we had the internet, you know, and people would just be standing one by one outside observing the sky and talking to each other over many decades of time or hundreds of years, you know, notice this correlation too. But now that we have the internet, we see these photos, this rash of photos coming in on the night of a big storm of all these lunar halos. So I found that to be really fascinating.
Yeah. So, Deborah, there's a meteor shower coming up, right? The Leonid meteor shower?
That's right. So you'll be hearing this probably in the early part of November. And the most exciting meteor shower that always happens in November is the Leonid meteor shower. And that's happening in the middle of the month. But this year, there's another shower that we're featuring at our website that we think might be a good shower as well. And that's the North Taurid meteor shower. So the Leonids peak around mid-month, around the 15th, 16th, 17th of November. The North Taurids peak earlier than that. They peak just a few days before that, like say around the 10th or 11th. So good time to watch for meteors coming up.
Okay, so the moon is waning now, right?
That's right.
So what's it going to look like for these meteor showers?
Well, the moon is in a good place because the moon will be waning around the 9th, 10th, 11th when the North Taurids will be going on, and it'll be a really thin waxing crescent moon in the west after sunset that'll set really soon after the sun during the nights of the Leonid meteor shower. So the moon is in a great place. So, of course, the most important thing about meteor showers is that you need to get to a dark sky location. We recommend state parks and national parks. And if you do an online search for either one of those, you can find listings in your area of where to go to observe the shower. So most meteor showers are best after midnight, and that's the case here. So it's good to camp on those nights. And a lot of people like to, you know, bring their sleeping bags and just lie outside under the beautiful dark night sky and watch the meteors.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Deborah.
Thank you, Mike.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird. The North Taurid meteors, peaking November 9th, 10th, 11th, and the Leonids, the 15th, 16th, 17th. Catch them if you can. You're listening to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science and music from Austin, Texas. This week, Earth Sky was conducting some interviews at UT's Jackson School of Geosciences, and I met with a geologist there who's also a musician. Her name's Leslie Wood. We'll be posting that interview in the future, but in the meantime, I wanted to play one of Leslie's songs. Leslie said that her travels as a geologist have informed and inspired her songwriting. Here's Yellow Mountain by Elwood and the Spice Boys.
He came down from Yellow Mountain, he was there to take a bride in the valley of Green River, where the land flows rich and wide. When he saw her neath the aspen, his heart was stricken down, but she was promised to another, by her father's word was bound. When the moon pours on the mountains like the rainfall from the sky, when the sun beats on the desert, you can hear the eagles cry, for they know there are those who'd rather fly on Yellow Mountain. So she paid to cross the river, every night with him she'd stay. They planned to leave for Yellow Mountain when the full moon lit their way. Her father forbade her to take the ferry, so to keep their love apart. But the will of another can't deny what's in the heart. When the moon pours on the mountains like the rainfall from the sky, when the sun beats on the desert, you can hear me on Yellow Mountain. So they leapt upon the river, he came from the other side. When their hearts met in the middle, they let the current take their lives. Now they say on that great river, when the full moon shines at night, you still see them swim the river, get out on the other side. When the moon pours on the mountains like the rainfall from the sky, when the sun beats on the desert, you can hear the eagles cry, for they know there are those who'd rather fly on Yellow Mountain. Yeah, when the moon falls on the mountain like the rainfall from the sky, when the sun beats on the desert, you can hear the eagles cry, for they know there are those who'd rather fly. Yeah, they know there are those who'd rather fly, and they say there are those who still fly on Yellow Mountain.
We're Earth Sky. We interview the world's top scientists. It's been 20 years since the historic Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, which led to historic agreements on climate change and environmental pollution such as leaded gasoline. Biologist Paul Ehrlich co-authored a paper in the science journal Nature that explored how humanity can sustain itself through the 21st century. On the line now to explain his findings is Paul Ehrlich. Dr. Ehrlich, welcome.
Great to be here.
Now, it's been 20 years since the historic Earth Summit in Rio, where world leaders met to rethink how to grow their economies in line with the environment. What message do you, as a scientist, have for the world now?
Well, the message is, of course, they haven't accomplished that, but they were trying an impossible thing. That is, we're already way beyond the carrying capacity of the planet, even with many people living in misery. And there is no way to grow your economy and also maintain your long-term ability to survive as a civilization.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about that carrying capacity and population. Dr. Ehrlich, your latest paper in the science journal Nature examines how Earth, population 7 billion now in 2012, can get to a sustainable size. What did you find?
Well, the way you can get to a sustainable size, first of all, is to start gradually reducing both population size and the amount each person consumes, because the best estimates we can make are that with present technologies, you might be able to support 1.5 billion people permanently on the planet, and we are 7 now, and we're going to add, if the projections are correct, 2.5 billion people by 2050. That means we're going to add many more people than were alive when I was born in 1932, And most people don't recognize that the additional people are going to have a disproportional impact on our life support systems because people are smart. We started out using the richest resources. We farmed the bottom lands. We drank water just fresh out of the rivers, which was clean. And as we have grown, of course, we've had to go to poorer and poorer resources so that, for instance, each person now has to be fed from more marginal land, get resources from poorer sources. For instance, when we started with copper, we had it 100% lying around on the ground, and now we're mining ores at 0.5%. So we are pushing in exactly the wrong direction. And unless we change our ways, the scientific community has said many times that civilization just isn't going to persist.
One of the concepts that you explore in this paper for Nature is the concept of natural capital, putting a price on nature for the services it gives.
It's understanding that, for example, humanity is utterly dependent on flows of things that we get from nature, from natural ecosystems. Natural capital, things like our deep, rich agricultural soils, which are being eroded away at very much more rapidly than they're being reformed. Fossil groundwater all over the world, we're pumping out aquifers at rates beyond what they can be recharged. And the biodiversity that runs our life support systems, which is disappearing at something on the order of a couple thousand times the historic rate, and of course not being regenerated at any significant rate. And we have a situation where most economists and most politicians think the cure to our problems is growth, when actually that's the disease. And our natural capital, among other things, for instance, includes the forests that absorb carbon dioxide from the atmosphere that should be being regrown everywhere, but they're still being cut down. So we got to learn, our politicians have to learn to evaluate our natural capital, and people have to get behind them to make sure that they do everything possible to preserve the things that are critical to us. For example, we are losing our pollinators. In the United States, the last estimate I saw was that pollinators of our crops provide something on the order of $20 billion worth of value, and it's something we're destroying without really thinking about it.
Well, Dr. Ehrlich, you've said recently that just telling people what the science says hasn't brought about the changes we need. What will?
We formed a thing called the Millennium Alliance for Humanity and the Biosphere, which is trying to get not just natural scientists, but social scientists, people in the humanities, people in society in general, in business and so on, together to try and figure out how to change our behavior. Because, of course, despite the continual lies put out by a certain segment of our society, climate change is just one of many extremely serious problems, and it's getting worse every year. We're putting more greenhouse gases into the atmosphere every year. And fortunately, social scientists know a lot about how to change human behavior, but it's not being applied. One of the things, for example, that we can do maybe to totally solve the population problem and get our population gradually shrinking is to give full rights to all women everywhere, make sure they have the same pay, all the same opportunities, and so on, and they will have many fewer babies if that happens. And so simply working for women's rights is one thing that everybody can do to try and solve the overall problem of our overshoot, of being far beyond the capacity of the planet to support even today's population in the long term.
What's the most important thing you want people today to know about human sustainability?
The most important thing about human sustainability is that we are going to have to find ways to gradually and humanely reduce the size of our population, to stop the growth of our economy, and to see to it that people who need more consumption get it, but that the rich learn to consume less. We are going to have to reduce our level of consumption. There are lots of ways to do that that could be very pleasant and make all of our lives better.
You've been listening to biologist Paul Ehrlich of Stanford University. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. And that's our show. Thank you for joining us. This week's show was recorded at the Earth Sky Studios in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Special thanks this week to our musical contributors. For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next stage. There are so many artists, too much art, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Science
age.